Thank you. Hello, and thank you all for inviting me to join you today. I understand that your topic is respect, and my perspective of respect for our chat today will be that of including and involving individuals with special needs into our community fabric. It is totally from my own perspective. This is a very personal lens because of my daughter and her friends and my friends in that community that deal with these issues. So I'll just jump in. What we do when we have meetings, we often discuss issues around living with offspring demonstrating special needs with people who are in similar situations to that of our family. We have discussed many different challenges. Housing is huge, and looking after the special needs person going forward, it's a great big messy worry to wonder what's going to happen to your offspring when you're not able to look after them or whenever you're dead. So it's a great big messy worry that comes up frequently. But one idea that is quite universal among a very diverse group is that we would like to see more inclusion of those with special needs into our social fabric, to be seen as normal members of our community and to be treated as everyone else. People meet lots of struggles with this, but to me, it's not a big deal for Thunder Bay. The majority of people are very kind. A few are not. Here we have many organized initiatives to build upon. The Special Olympics are very well supported. Respite is available from Westway through the needs. The needs almost always outstrip the budget. Community Living Thunder Bay, March of Dimes, the Family Network provide activities and support, and the Lynn offers support as well. All of this is needed, greatly appreciated, and very well used. I believe there is a will in this community to fill unmet needs when they're recognized. There's a great community spirit. I think, though, that even with the existing support, those with special needs are left on the periphery of personal interactions and inclusion. From my perspective, I think in large part, this is likely due to an unfamiliarity of how to talk to those who are different. To be fair, attempts to communicate are frequently not received or appear to be appreciated by the person on the receiving end. Although some special needs folks have social graces, many do not. Many look a bit odd. They act a bit odd. They lack social skills and have few or no social filters. My daughter's a case in point. If you meet her on the street to say hello, you're pretty much guaranteed to receive an inappropriate reaction. She will turn her back to you and you won't see the smile on her face. Or she will fling her arms around and tell you, oh, okay, that's okay. She'll tell you that something in a very loud voice that's quite off-putting. She looks angry and out of control. But she'll talk to you and people shy away because, of course, it's really kind of difficult to deal with her. I met a friend the other day when out on our walk, and when Laura was predictably rude, my friend said, oh, that's great. I wish I could just say what I feel sometimes. So you never know, but I really appreciated her response. You listen to Lolly and decipher a bit, you will find she is telling you something that is very important to her. Or she's talking about something that has happened or something she saw. It's all a bit of a guessing game, a bit of a puzzle. Application of a bit of kindness and patience and respect will alter the situation. It would increase the level of comfort in interaction of all participants. People naturally shy away from uncomfortable circumstances. You can't really blame them. A while ago, I put a post on Facebook asking that parents speak to their children about the fact that everyone is not the same. If little ones are not around special needs children, they will not know how to encounter them. In fact, many little children look at Laura. They stare and they look quite inquisitive. and ask what's wrong with her. It opens a conversation. I usually enjoy that. The parents often look mortified. However, these are very young children. By the time we reach school age, we've taught them not to stare because it's rude, and they know to turn away. A friend of ours said to me that he didn't know how to talk to Laura. He saw her every week and never spoke to her. So we discussed some of her reactions and behaviors. I encouraged him to just try and speak normally in passing and ignore her inappropriate behavior. He did, and gradually increased the amount of time in the conversations. Last week, when we were out for a walk, he stopped on the road and she talked to him for ages, not coherently, about how her sister, her sister's fiance, and the two dogs weren't coming to visit. She is very upset with this circumstance. He was very patient and listened to it all. It was lovely of him. The issue of respect and worth is very important to me because I'm affected by it continually. Laura's friends and my friends with special needs children are affected by it continually. We tend to be somewhat isolated. It takes concerted effort to put yourself out in the community. It takes energy and organizational skills to get there. And it takes a bit of a tough skin as well. These special needs folks aren't invited to social gatherings, to join teams, choirs, dance classes. I know that Hanusha is involved with a wonderful dance group that supports a young lady with special needs. But oh, so many of these individuals are just not capable of being constructive participants. Because we want Laura to have a normalish life, I take her out and about. She goes most places with me. Well, she did before the COVID thing. For the most part, people are very considerate. We go to restaurants. She used to swim at the complex. These activities are not as straightforward as they might seem. As she doesn't transition, that means change from one subject or activity to the other, there's always a bit of a scene every time. Because of that, when we were at the pool, I used to put her in the water myself because I thought it was much better for everybody to hear her screeching, "No, mommy, no, mommy," instead of making it look like her support worker was being abusive and forcing her against her will. Of course, we were forcing her against her will because Laura doesn't have concepts, and it's very unhealthy to only do one single thing for your whole life. It's the same rigmarole on the way out of the pool because she will not want to come out. She's having fun. She likes it in there. So coming out is the same thing. It's the same rigmarole to go for a walk, to come in from a walk, to put on boots, to take off boots. You get the picture. Anyway, at the pool one day, we were having this little mad dance, and one of the older ladies who regularly attend the exercise class at the same time as Laura swam walked by me, and she said to me, "Don't worry, dear. She'll be fine once she gets in." I can't tell you how much I appreciated that. We are able to go to the concerts put on by the Consortium Aurora Borealis, but we always sit in the balcony not too far from the door in case it all goes to heck and we need to make a quick exit. Things are unpredictable with Laura. The part that calls to me about this situation and to speak about it a lot is that each such little things make a difference. Everyone wants to be seen, to be included in the conversation, whether they have special needs or not. A smile or a kind word in passing cost nothing and take little effort. One of Laura's friends is very enthusiastic and chatty. We used to go to McDonald's for lunch on a Wednesday. Anyway, this young woman talks to everyone who comes in. She will give them all a hug if she can. It's hard to get her to learn boundaries. We've been trying for decades. But while people have different reactions to this enthusiastic welcome and her garbled speech, which they can't understand, regardless of the reception, she was always upbeat, enthusiastic, and persistent. Her support worker does her best to mitigate and interpret this behavior. But really, you can't help but smile watching her. She's impervious. Most people routinely who routinely eat lunch there on a Wednesday have developed a remarkable number of responses to this enthusiastic greeting. Very few blow her off. A lot of the young guys just kind of freeze and wait for her to move on, and they kind of inch around her. But they are all pretty much kind. The occasional person's jerk, but what are you going to do about that? My concern is what we do as a community. The conditions that cause special needs are not contagious. I've never really understood what there is to be embarrassed about when extending a kindness to someone, special needs or not. So don't turn away. Don't look through them as if they're not there. Make eye contact. Don't glare at their inappropriate behavior. Some people glare just because we're different. No little mad dance is required. Too bad for them, because we're here to stay. If you look at the person and smile, nod a greeting or say hello in passing, that's great. If they glom onto you, and they might, you don't have to engage with them. If you don't want to talk to them, then just smile and tell them you can't chat right now, and pass on as you would with anyone else, because the whole clue is to treat them like they're normal, whatever that is. If you have an acquaintance with a special needs offspring, you might remember that they could be quite isolated. Their family member may require 24-hour care that precludes the caregiver from joining or attending activities. I have a friend like that. Sometimes I can stop in with coffee from Tim's, but I try to time my visits when her daughter is out with a worker. Otherwise, my friend is very uncomfortable because her daughter wants her attention all the time. And I mean every single second of every single day. And she can't sit, and she's embarrassed that she can't be a gracious hostess while still caring for her daughter. So it's hard for her. And we all do silly things and have unreasonable dreams sometimes. I tried curling once. Sometimes I suffer from flights of idiocy. Of course I couldn't do that. My daughter has intractable epilepsy. I couldn't guarantee there to be there on time and to focus completely on the team and the game. So as a result, most of my activities are really flexible. Brenda asked me, when I feel overwhelmed, where is the light? Well, sometimes there is no light. Anyway, there's always a bunch of things to do, and you just have to do them in the dark, and eventually there's light. Laura's beautiful. She has a wonderful smile, a great sense of humor. She's fun. I get to play a lot. I was raised in the Christian faith, so sometimes I pray. Frequently, the answer is no. Sometimes it's yes. Laura and I attend Salem Evangelical Lutheran Church in Pass Lake. The people there are very gracious, generous, and accepting. They don't mind if she talks through the service. She loves the music, and people will say to me, "Did you see her face?" when they play whatever it was she likes. She particularly likes the guitar. She particularly doesn't care for the piano, which is what I play, and she hears too much of it, I suppose. We have a lot of friends there that give us good support. I have also other friends who listen to me vent and frequently suggest we get together for lunch or have a glass of wine. I'm lucky because I can take Lolly with me to the restaurant, and she will sit there with her pencil and book to write fairly quietly and eat lunch. My friend's daughter isn't able to do that, so we meet when she has respite. We talk about worries and concerns, what's happening in the community, and everything under the sun, and we laugh a lot. It's always a long lunch. Our family's been on this journey for a while now. Laura's 40. Advocacy is a big part of what parents with special needs offspring do. We advocated for Laura in the healthcare system. From she was a baby through until she started school, she spent a lot of time in the hospital, and sometimes safety was a great concern. With the seizures, she needed to be observed all the time. So I argued with nursing administration, not nurses themselves. The nurses were great. The administration had rules. She couldn't be down the hall and around the corner away from everyone at night, because at the time she went into status epilepticus often, That means she didn't stop seizuring without intervention, and she required Valium to stop seizures. It was a terrible drug that took several days to work through her system, and she was dazed and walked into doors for at least 2 or 3 days after it. But she had to have it, and they didn't have time to go down and around the corner, look at her, decide she needed the Valium, go back to the nursing station, get the Valium, and go back and give it. By that time, she would have had severe brain damage extended. Eventually, they discovered Ativan, and that works a lot better, so things are good now. The medications for epilepsy were hard on the system and didn't work for her. There were several mountains to climb. She used to seizure 4 times a night. I thought I was normal. I was brain dead, but I thought I was doing well. But I didn't have enough sleep in those days. When we went into the school system, there were a few more little hills and bumps. We lived in a small town in a different province, and Laura disrupted the class. She was always, and I mean by that daily, sent home, usually by 9, 10 in the morning. School started at 9. One day she wouldn't take off her coat. One day my husband and I were called to the school to watch a video of her disruptive behavior in the class. She was hiding under a desk as far from the teacher as she could get, not making a sound. I didn't blame her. I would have been hiding too. The teacher and I had daily battles. The principal I only battled with weekly. The teacher called her to go home because she lied. When she asked where her daddy was one day in school, Laura said, Algeria. And I, of course, got a call to come and get her because that's not acceptable. At which time I advised the teacher that my husband was indeed in Algeria. He's a sailor, and the ship was offloading emergency supplies for refugees paid for by the Canadian government. She got in trouble another day for not drawing a boat properly when that was the class assignment. Fortunately, that day, the special ed consultant for the school was working one-to-one with her. And it just was serendipitous that that woman's husband was head of the HR department for the company that my husband worked for. And she pointed out to the teacher that Laura's picture was of the deck of a cargo ship seen from the bridge. Cargo holds, cranes, booms, gangway, all of it. Daddy is the ship's captain, and that is where Lolly spent most of her time, watching the loading while he was working in port and we could visit with him. It went on and on. Eventually, the pediatric neurologist said to pull her out of school and wrote an order for her to be homeschooled, and she was. In the end, she was placed in a special ed class a few towns away, long bus ride, where the teacher and the teacher's assistant were total angels who loved all their difficult little charges, and she had a great time there. Life was good. Then we moved and the process started over. Even though I explained to the new school that she needed to be in a special needs class, we had issues with busing. When she left school and went to the sheltered workshop, things were great until the administration changed and the experts in the government insisted on different programming. Laura's activities were suddenly inappropriate. She had to be age appropriate. So head ahead again with the supervisor. Which age was she to be appropriate for? Chronological or developmental? The supervisor's background was early education. She really had no clue about adult developmental delay. Supported housing is another issue we advocate for. Where will she live and who will look after her when I'm dead or cannot? That's huge for most people that I know. There are behaviors to manage daily because she does not change from one behavior to the next easily or at all, really. Some days I'm a wonderful mother and I handle them all well. Some days I don't. I'm lucky in family and in my life. My husband is great. When things are going down the tubes, he will often do something silly that makes Laura laugh and the whole problem dissolves. My other daughter is great. For her whole life, she's treated Laura like a normal sister, like she's totally normal. She has always called her out on her behavior and praised her, and she does well. It's a gift. No one else does that for Laura. Megan's fiance is wonderful. He does things with her and is considerate of her. She will do things for Pete that she won't do for the rest of us, like come for dinner, go downstairs. the dogs, both border collies, heard her and keep her safe, and they keep people that they don't exactly trust away from her as well. My mother was amazing when she was alive and looked after Laura for me until 2 days before she died. My father loved her to death and played with her all the time. I get respite hours several times a week from the Lynn and 6 weekends per year from Westway. I get to save up my respite time from Westway, and Carl and I in the last probably 5 years have been able to go away because Laura can go and stay with Megan, and with the respite help, she and her fiance can look after Laura while they work. And it's very, very good of them to give us that break. It has made the world of difference to us. I have always had amazing support, but I haven't always felt like I had amazing support. I get lots of inspiration. I'm on a number of electronic mailing lists for special needs. There are scads of amazing parents who move mountains on behalf of their children. I'm envious of their energy and their abilities and single-minded dedication. I wonder where they get the time. I should feel inspired by them, but really I just find they make me feel tired and mostly inadequate. We have endeavored to give Laura and our family as normal a life as possible. Special needs children take a lot of parental time. Our other daughter has always been very competent. That little girl needed attention too. I'm pretty sure, in spite of my best efforts, she didn't get it. I had a full-time job because I wanted my daughters to know they could make it on their own if they were single or had children. They could be independent. The people who inspire me are those that are struggling like I am. They cope every day. When you run into them on the street, they have a big smile. They're happy to have a conversation and a laugh. They're amazing and full of joy. They will talk about their worries and solutions they have found they will share. Having a special needs child is hard. It's stressful and exhausting. It's unpredictable. It's inconvenient. Laura has made our lives very different from what we imagined or would have chosen. I think without Laura, I would not have appreciated life as much as I do. I would probably have been more self-centered and entitled, thinking many things for granted. I would have traveled more and retained more friends because I would have had more time. I would have had a totally different journey. But we have a great life. We have lots of fun. We have tears and joy and laughter. She is just a joy to be around. We are just like any other family, never a dull moment. We are blessed. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share our story.